Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Blake Shepherd. I'm on the Link team based out of Redmond, and I'm thrilled to be hosting this panel discussion this afternoon about leveraging Link's ecosystem. I guess we're working at a little bit of a disadvantage, so bear with us. There was no coffee between the last sessions, so if you fall asleep, then we won't take it personally. But yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. Thrilled to have these five individuals with me here today. I'll give them a chance to introduce themselves before we get going into discussion. But let me set some context first, and why are we here? And I think a very concrete experience for me was Monday night when I got here to Las Vegas and went wandering on the expo hall. It was amazing to see the breadth of partners, the energy, the vitality that was represented there, and then to think that it was just one small portion of the overall ecosystem of Link, which numbers now over 1,300 Link certified partners around the world. And then I kind of put myself in the shoes of a customer and thought, wow, this could very well be daunting. To have to think about who do I work with, how do I work with, what's the next step to take given the options that are in front of me, and so we've got this panel discussion today to address this how to get the most out of the Link ecosystem, how to think about the opportunities that sit there. In terms of what I hope we accomplish in this discussion, I hope we surface some themes, I identify some issues, perhaps have a debate or two along the way. But my hope is that you as customers get a better understanding and have more confidence about where to go next in your Link deployments. In terms of how we'll run this, we'll have a discussion the last much of the time, but I do want to leave time for your questions and invite your thoughts at the end. So make sure I'll keep kind of watching the clock to make sure we've got that time. And courtesy of our friends at Jabber, we've got some prizes for particularly good questions. So take some notes as you go along. So with that, again, thank you to all of you for being here. Let's kick it off. I'll start with an easy question. Let's go down the line here and just give an introduction of who you are, what is your organization, and what part does it play in the Link ecosystem?
Sure. So I'm Holger Reisinger, representing Jabra. We are 440 years in communication. Obviously, it wasn't Link that days. We started as a telegraph company.
It was OCS, right?
Yeah, almost. So started as a telegraph company, but nowadays we are a sound company at our core. So that is hearing instruments, headsets, and speakerphones. And with that, we are representing the last 350 feet of a Link deployment. So depending whether you're corded or wireless solution. So at Jabra, we have a say that devices make experiences, and these experiences actually create behavior, changing the way enterprises communicate and collaborate. So the user is in the middle of the solution we are bringing to the table. And this is where we believe we drive adoption and make a Link deployment a success at the end of the day.
Great, thank you very much. My name is Alan Percy. I'm the Senior Director of Marketing at Audio Codes, and we're a 20-year-old company that has expertise in voice over IP technology. And most folks know us in the Link space as having delivered the most comprehensive network infrastructure for a Microsoft Link, including our media gateways, enterprise session border controllers, our SBAs, and more recently our new line of IP phones, along with some application enhancements, including call recording, et cetera. We're about 600 employees scattered around the globe, with a lot of our development expertise coming out of our headquarters office in Tel Aviv. One of the things that we, part of the reason we're in today's panel and discussion is we play a primary role in integrating Microsoft Link into either the existing infrastructure at an enterprise, for example, their existing PBX or IP PBX, or providing the connectivity out to the public network, obviously for conferencing and inbound and outbound calling, providing those integration, along with, of course, the set-top devices. So glad to be here and looking forward to your questions and comments and feedback.
Thanks, Alan. Don Happy, I'm the Global Practice Director for AT&T Consulting. We're the professional services firm within AT&T. Our group founded the EC practice in 2007, where we merged our IP telephony practice, our convergence practice, with our Microsoft Technologies consulting practice. Traditionally, we focus on large, medium and large customers, particularly in the space of voice transformation. And for the last couple of years, we focused a lot of initiatives within our sales channels and our internal teams around voice transformation. So moving from one PBX platform to the other. And we have very large customers doing that. So we have a professional services audit company of 200,000 for Link users. And we go as early back as 2008 for actually Royal Dutch Shell, which is Microsoft's case study and success story and poster child for voice. What's well not well known is AT&T is actually hosting that Microsoft UC infrastructure. So those are some good examples of some of the scale and projects that we have going on. And then certainly internally, from a product perspective, we certify with vendors sitting here on the panel today. And then we have projects, cross projects with other systems integrator, such as HP.
Sonu Agrawal, CEO of Unify Square. Unify Square was founded 6 years ago by some ex-Microsoft product team members like myself to focus on helping global enterprises succeed with Link and Link Voice. So we do everything it takes to help global enterprises really get Link right from a deployment aspect, operations, support, etc. And those are our three main lines of business, deployment and consulting services. There's products and monitoring, reporting, customer satisfaction, and all the operations around Link and support. And in doing that, we collaborate with a broad spectrum of vendors across the ecosystem. It's also our mission to empower the ecosystem to help our customers succeed. And so as an example, right here, we've collaborated with every one of our panelist organizations up here. Just as an example, with Jordan's org on a large global technology company deployment with Link, and with Don's org on Royal Dutch Shell. So very collaborative in that sense.
And my name is Jordan Lee. I'm from Hewlett Packard. And my role is I'm actually the United States leader for our mobility practice for consulting. And actually, I was pleasantly surprised that, as I was just mentioned, that we've actually been working actively with every single firm represented here as well on a number of our projects. You may have heard that HP is actually the largest Link implementation in the world today. We implemented Link for ourselves for 410,000 users globally. And so there is a case study out there that just was released a couple days ago with some more details on that. Looking forward to the discussion.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. So I'll increase the difficulty a bit on this next question. So our competitors, we find, sometimes sort of warn our potential customers about Link and claim that if you go with Link, there just isn't one throat to choke, and therefore it's a difficult purchase to make. What's your response to such criticism? No one throat to choke, no one stop shop.
The question I would ask is exactly whose throat is being choked in this case, because it may not be what you think. When you're looking at solutions and you're looking at what the opportunities for your company, you have to look at a number of things. One, there is no such thing as one throat to choke, even from some of our competitors. This doesn't really exist. Number two, you're looking at the cost and the benefits. I mean, I don't hear that much myself when I talk to clients. Obviously, our competitors come in and they say things like that, but really, when our clients are looking rationally and clearly at the opportunity that they have to move to Link, I think that argument doesn't hold that much water. But that's just what I'm seeing in when I'm talking to clients. It's not holding as much impact or sway with people as it used to.
Exactly. History has shown time and time again that when you unleash market forces and competition at a space and fundamental economics, that leads to by far the best outcomes for everyone involved, and the customer in particular. The most innovative outcomes and at lowest cost. And it's just a very stark contrast with sort of a siloed way of doing things, a siloed world. If you look at technology today, the internet, mobile, BYOD, they're all about unleashing market forces for the best outcomes.
Absolutely, yeah. Only request is that you use the microphone, please, so we're recording.
The answer I thought you were going to give, Jordan, was that you're the one throat to choke. That HP, as you say, you work with all of these guys. Don't you become that one throat?
We certainly can be. We are a full system integrator, so we can offer a one-stop shop, if you will, for a link implementation. But even that is not going to be all HP. We may control it, and we may manage it, but we actually resell. We resell other people's hardware on our contracts, and there's never a case where it's all HP hardware. Even though we do have a networking division, I'm sure you're aware of that, there's no client on the planet who's all HP networking. So there's never a case where it's all HP, even if we have the paper, the contract. It's still going to involve a number of these other companies here and others, so there's never really that one throat to choke, unless you want to look at, yes, HP is holding a contract. We can go and hold you to your contract. But if you look beneath that, you're going to see other companies and our partners.
So it's interesting being a professional services firm within a telco. And so telcos realize that there's declining business. And so we need to capitalize as a telco and get as big a piece of the pie in the other areas. So when I give you the concept of we'll provide you a SIP trunk, we'll provide you the managed link application, we'll provide you the MRS router at the site, and then we'll manage the audio codes gateway, that gives us a pretty good end-to-end visibility throughout the system, and that way we can provide better SLAs. Naturally, we can't do that for every single customer. Luckily, a lot of our large customers have managed services, WAN routers, and so we got some of those pies already. Now we're working towards getting the link application as a managed service, and there were the other attachment solutions. So the one thing's the best I say is, and I talked about this in my presentation earlier today, is the partner ecosystem is a beautiful thing until you have a problem. And then the customer becomes a swivel chair. So we know exactly what this question is like, and we're trying to capitalize on that to become as much as possible the throat to choke. And you saw how the linkage of all those pieces are. Well, that's the voice quality on every single one of those linkages. So we try to strive to that.
And I would probably add to that discussion that in the telecom world, they only offer one throat to choke, right? In the IT world, you're used to making a decision as a business is, do I want to have one throat to choke, or do I want to have a multi-vendor environment? And that depends on the expertise and the capabilities of your organization. So you could choose, for example, you could roll your own completely and not use an integrator, which would rely heavily on your own skill sets, and you might decide to invest in those skills to have to pick and choose the elements that would make up your solution. Or the opposite end of the spectrum, say, I don't want to build that expertise. I want to outsource all that expertise because it's a one-time implementation. So I'm going to leverage one of these solution implementation systems integrators to create that solution. And then I'll operate it, but I don't want to have to build it. And sort of the metaphor we use occasionally is, if you want to have a pool in your backyard, you could get a shovel and start digging a hole in your own backyard, but you're probably not going to do that. You're probably going to hire it out because you don't mind skimming the pool and taking a swim in the pool, but you really don't want to build the pool. And that's many times is how this kind of situation. So the point is that they can choose that businesses can make a decision between a decomposed implementation or, you know, outsourced on their own, when that wasn't possible a few years ago. And it's been and this is one of the key decisions that they're making, and you now have that choice.
No, I just want to add to the discussion. I mean, perfectly aware that this question is about system integration and the one point to contact if there's any problem. But from a user's perspective, of course, you appreciate to have choice, right? And I think it's the same for the infrastructure as such. So from a user's perspective, we have seen in the first wave of deployment where everything was about cost, that companies roll out one and the same solution, audio endpoint, to everyone in the organization. But in fact, we are all individuals and we have different roles, and we need to have a piece of hardware, something we can speak into that is really down to our task. So if I'm a mobile worker, very likely I want to have a wireless solution. If I'm desk bound, I might prefer a telephone or a corded headset solution. So you have to offer this choice to the users in order to really get adoption of your solution. So from a user's perspective, definitely having choice is a beauty and it's an advantage. There's a comment. We tried to repeat it, yeah.
If you want to do a full end-to-end solution, which is not only telephony, your network, your WAN, NetLAN, it's also PCs. They're a major cause of problems. Also then, do you manage these as well? So there's so many facets to it. It's very difficult to have one single place, one single customer vendor.
Yeah, that's very true. And just to build on the point, I mean, we were talking about the one throat to choke. I mean, I have heard of cases where a company will come into one of our clients, and their recommendation is that they pretty much rip out their entire infrastructure and replace it with their new infrastructure rather than working with what's already there. And when you're looking at link deployments, you're rarely seeing that. It's usually iterative. You're doing a pilot followed by a phased rollout. And so that implies integration, and it implies retention of some of the existing infrastructure for some period of time.
So the current economic crisis that we've got, people are not just going to replace everything. It's absolutely an ROI calculation, and you're going to reuse the existing equipment, but manage it with that as well.
Exactly. And then over time, as you're going through your phases, you can make intelligent decisions as to what changes you want to make. And as Link becomes more ubiquitous, you're going to see changes in the network, in the devices, and everything else. But coming in and saying, all this stuff has got to go, I just don't see very many people signing up for that.
I agree with Jordan. It's a voice transformation, and the business decisions are incorporated in that. So in the case of the large professional service and audit firm, there was recent investments in some PBXs, so we're integrating with those, and then we're capping and replacing other legacy, the pain points and the cost buckets, as we call them.
One of the points we mentioned in a casual conversation before we got started is, you know, in the past, when you bought from one of the brand names, you didn't realize you actually were buying a solution that had already been pre-integrated, right? Because most of the manufacturers today, OEM, a lot of the equipment or the underlying technology, you know, we've provided that technology in many cases that's been rebranded and sold under those other brand names. Well, the reality is now the new situation is that those brands are exposed, whereas before they, you know, were painted over, had a different logo on it. But it was the same technology that today you can buy under the original manufacturer's brand name. So the reality is that you thought you had one throat to choke, but the reality is it was actually multiple vendors providing the solution in the first place.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. So I think what I want to do now is build on something that Sonu said before, and that is that in the Link ecosystem, there are market forces. And the Link ecosystem that is best of breed. Well, inherent in that model is competition. And so the fact that even some of you here compete with each other on certain dimensions, how does that impact how you work with customers or how you approach customers?
Huge space, voice transformation. It's a huge mission. And having more participants in that space from a vendor perspective sort of validates the space and pushes everyone's boundaries, if you will, in terms of innovating and delivering and so on. So net, we think it's a good thing. It's just a natural order of things in any space that's complex and big, that there will be many specialists, and you want the best people, the best vendors, the best jobs, and that all of that needs to come together.
And I'll stay in that theme of innovate and offer customers other capabilities other than just the Link platform to advance your solution. So on the booth at AT&T, we have a product called Toggle. And if you have a BYOD strategy, IT's left with having to grapple with the challenges of BYOD. So in the case of Toggle, it allows you to virtualize the mobile device so you have a personal persona and a business persona. And that way IT can manage that business side of that persona. So it's these add-on value-added services that we can add to our Link deployments that can make a good value proposition. And then we think about the deployment and how can we help customers more strategically deploy. Because you would probably want to spend more time focusing on end-user training, business adoption, communication-enabled business process. So let us roll the trucks to install the AudioCodes gateway. Let us roll the truck to have ABFS, AT&T Business Field Services, do MACDs on the gateways and the phones, and then let AT&T even offer you not an OPEX model, including the Link infrastructure, but we can give you an OPEX model on the AudioCode gateways. We can give you an OPEX model on the phones. So we try to do a lot of things that differentiate us on our Link deployments.
And we made a strategic decision a number of years ago to take the expertise that we had developed in the gateway technology and spread out horizontally so that we could deliver many of the different elements that are needed as part of the deployment with the intent of making it possible for someone to have a homogeneous platform that they can run Link on top of when it comes to the network infrastructure. And it's taken us a while to moving to session border controllers and survivable branch appliances, et cetera. But the key strategic advantage then for the consumer or for the customer is that they're able to learn one family, learn one set of support procedures, learn one set of management systems, and make it consistent across the board, and that dramatically reduces the complexity of managing the overall solution. And that's the goal is that there's a software platform and a hardware platform, and that's very familiar for most IT buyers today. They're used to buying a hardware platform and buying software and having the two environments to work in. I'm losing my voice. It's my Vegas voice. My apologies.
I just want to touch more on your question about competition. I think most of us, just as kind of Americanism, is that we like to see choice. And when there's competition in the marketplace, and when our clients have the option of choosing a number of different partners or vendors in a specific area, I think we're all rejoicing. Because that means, one, it's a healthy market. Two, there's choice. And three, that tells me at least that I'm operating in the right space because there's interest in this space. People are obviously seeing opportunities, companies are seeing opportunities, and they're coming in with innovative products. So I think everybody wins in this scenario. When you don't have competition, when you're talking about a closed system or a closed solution, to me, that stagnates. That's one throat to choke, but that's not the other guy's throat. It's not where you want to be. The competition really, we talk about open stack and open source and all the rest of that, that's all about competition and letting the best products kind of bubble up and having choice. And that's, to me, very positive. And we look at that as a positive. That our whole, HP's whole movement in the last few years has really been towards open. We're trying to not lock people into our things, and we don't want to see other people locked in either.
Yeah. So there's
I mean, I just wonder, to some extent, the first question and second question are related, which is, one throat to choke, it's difficult, there are so many in a lot of different areas. And then there's this co-opetition question, and if everybody gets along, then that's great. And to some extent, it's a bit of aligning the right choice so that if the vendors are really not overlapping in terms of functionality, then they can cooperate more effectively than if what you're buying is not sort of lining up. So in fact, here we have sort of, this is sort of a suite for an enterprise, because you have endpoint, and you have a gateway, and you have network providing professional services, and you have monitoring and health check, and then you have system integration and global support if you want a second source on some of that. So so sort of here you have an aligned complementary. If instead we had chosen, say, for endpoint Plantronics, or we'd chosen Sonos, we might be hearing sort of a different song about co-opetition and how effective is. And so I think to some extent you have to decide how well aligned the team you're bringing in is. And one of the things that Microsoft I think could do, and I don't really know what the solution is here, but when I look at the catalog, it's really undifferentiated. It's extremely hard to tell sort of who really has experience working in an ecosystem together. Or perhaps there is such a thing, or perhaps we should think about developing such an ecosystem. I mean, HP does have the ones that they support. But just sort of a continuation of this question rather would be, how does one approach, as an emerging sort of ecosystem, a model to solve both the throat to choke and the suite problem, and the alignment of cooperating vendors?
So we published a white paper on strategic planning for unified communications, and one of the statements in there is reduced to a strategic number of suppliers. You can still get a lot of choice with a few set of suppliers. So these suppliers on stage, we can give you a lot of different choices. We can give you a lot of different deployment methods. Today I talked through the pros and cons of all the different deployment methods. HP and AT&T can do premise, we can do hosted, we can do cloud. We can give you the vendors on the stage today, or we can give you options. So there's a lot of flexibility, but I think the cornerstone is you got to be to a certain point that you have to think about the end game, and that's the operational impact to your environment, and you're going to have to determine whether you want a big open list of Chinese menu of partners, or you want to list a few strategic ones to work with.
Just want to add from a headset vendor perspective, and you mentioned some of our competitors. Actually, the journey has started with Jabra doing the specification for the USB implementation of headsets. And actually, we were very happy that Microsoft did an optimized program out of that, because our biggest competition, to be frank, is non-use of headsets. This is a real productivity gain using headsets, but people had this 100-year-old habit of operating handsets. So building a standard for Microsoft and inviting other vendors to do that was helping us to boost our sales, because with that more choice, there was more visibility of headsets, and the adoption of headsets being used in deployments like Link was really growing. Today, I would say our long-year partners reselling our audio solutions differentiate themselves by integrating our devices deeper into Link and into the business process application. So we go beyond voice just being used for communication purposes. So these partners, system integrators, differentiate themselves by integrating voice as a control element or as a boost me element. So getting feedback from the software, talking to a machine, doing text to speech and speech to text supported by our devices. So there's a lot of room of differentiation as well. So I think the market is for a very long time not saturated or over crowded with competitors. There's so much room, because it's a growth market. There's so much room and opportunity to differentiate and build a better solution, and by that driving adoption. So,
and Bernie, I think you have a really good point in the sense that the Link hardware catalog can almost backfire, in the sense that everybody has the same size picture and the same size text box, and the side effect of that is that there's very hard for the buyer to make a decision as to which of these is the best fit for me. Right, so it's typical sort of e-tailing positioning, and that's obviously it has the advantage of it gives a place for all these things to appear, but the reality is the shopping should probably occur at the SI, that the SI who has the experience and has the expertise and has the history with the elements should be making the recommendations, not scrolling through a catalog of product images and looking at specifications, because that's rife with making choices sometimes that were not necessarily well integrated together, but they might have passed the basic test. So, I know I totally agree with you. And I think there are some alliances starting to form in the industry, too. If you look at who's working together, in which environments, you'll see that certain vendors are repeat partners in these kinds of implementations, and those alliances are forming.
You will see the vendor alliances, certainly, because you're deeply into this, and I will to some extent because I look across a fair number of clients. But a lot of clients I talk to, they're coming in, they want Link, they look at the website, and they're kind of lost in terms of the ecosystem and how to navigate it.
If I think about Contact Center specifically on that, right, it's something you don't offer at all, and you say we have partners, and yet it's tough for, I've spoken to a number of different enterprises trying to figure out how do I sort out among the many different choices that there are.
And so in the theme of 18 to try to doing everything, so this is Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. And what we've done in this particular solution is they had separate autonomous initiatives going on within the company. So they have a Genesis, they have an RP for Contact Center. That was one initiative. They had a Link 2010 upgrade to 2013. Very robust team of professionals there. I mean, some of the smartest Link talent in the industry with that BNSF team. And then they also had a 213 PBX voice transformation project that they had to grapple with. And then on top of that, they had Microsoft Office 365 that they were looking at and evaluating. So what we did is we worked with them to bring all these projects into one strategy and unify the strategy. What we provided is a hosted Genesis solution that is integrated with IAMR Presence with Link, and then we provide a SIP core into the single application stack, providing SIP for both Link and Genesis. And the nice thing about Genesis, you have an option there. You can anchor that on Link, or when the contact center teams are concerned, you know, then you can do a direct, yeah, absolutely. And then we obviously high availability. And then from a partner ecosystem, you see that some of the logos, but out in the field, we're using AudioCodes gateways. And then we're starting the evaluation of devices, so Jabra and other devices for this environment. And a lot of the vendors on the partner pavilion, we're starting to evaluate those, and we're mapping those to personas. So the personas within the BNS environment will drive the type of device that they select. So that's a good scenario of what AT&T can provide from a fewer strategic vendors.
Yeah. Also, another perspective on your question there. In any space, in any sort of well-defined space, there's sort of an ideal number of competitors you want in the space for the best dynamics to occur. And that ideal number tends to be about 3. Could be 2, could be 4. But if a space has got that many vendors and you kind of have the right elements of success and a straightforward enough customer set of choices for the best outcomes to happen. Look at, say, mobile operating systems, about 3. Servers, high-end servers, about 2 or 3. And on. And I think the same principles extend to Link. If you look at devices, look at the gateways, you look at contact center systems, there's a manageable number of partner choices in the ecosystem, and I actually see Microsoft's invisible hand in cultivating that system the way it is. I've actually felt Microsoft take a fairly deliberate approach to sort of cultivating a reasonable number of partners in each of those subspaces for the ultimate benefit of all.
Great. Well, let's make this more concrete, though, for now. Insofar as we, wherever the ecosystem is today, what, I guess going down the line, what specific advice do you have for customers to navigate this, to get the best of breed, to work across multiple partners?
My answer could be very obvious, but I guess once you get past messaging and presence, and you're really getting into those areas of more complexity and integration. What you're going to see, companies like HP and AT&T and Unify Squared, you're going to see us working with, like he was saying, a small number of partners. We're not going to be recommending solutions that we don't stand behind. We're just like the plumber. We don't want someone to call us back. We want it to be fixed the first time and done right the first time. So you're going to see the number of partners that we're working with and recommending to our clients is going to shrink. And it's going to probably be like he said, two or three. As it gets more complex and as your environment gets more complex, it would be wise to look at a partner to help you navigate that in one way or another. Maybe it's either with a strategy or with a road mapping or maybe actually helping with the whole implementation. But I would certainly seek advice as you're getting into the more complicated areas. That's just, you know, my opinion as an SI. I must admit I'm slightly biased because we provide that type of advice. But I think, you know, there are plenty of people you can get that advice from.
Choosing partners is a very personal decision. And for our customers, in quite a few cases, probably the majority, we see our sponsors for Link literally put their careers on the line for the Link mission. They are making a big career bet on Link. And so in that context, I think a couple things are become very important in the whole selection process. First, what are the organization's unique needs? What are your, as a customer's, unique needs? And how do they map to potential partner alternative choices that you have? Second, and this might be the most powerful of them all, what have other customers in your situation tended to use for their partner slates, if you will? Third, it also comes down to chemistry. Which partners are you comfortable with on sort of a day-to-day basis? Because there will be ups, there will be downs, the relationship. It's pretty important to have a strong, two-way, healthy commitment through and through. So those sort of factors tend to frame, at least from what we've seen, our customers' decisions around this.
Yeah, I can certainly see the challenge from a customer perspective, putting myself in the customer's shoes, because when I look at the partnerships that we've established over the last 5 or 6 years, and you see, it really wasn't the value proposition learned in the pre-sales, which is what really customers are getting before they make a decision. It was the post-sales that you really learn the integrity and the capability of a company. And so Alan's team, as when there's post issues in a project or there's custom integration that's required, we found that AudioCodes, you know, comes to the call when it's that post scenario. And that's really the challenge with customers. They don't kind of get a lot of those post delivery challenges. They don't see when the customer is in real dire need. And that's, you know, that's me putting myself in your shoes. So I think from getting support from a systems integrator, whether it's HP or AT&T Consulting, I think that's very important because we'll share that scar tissue with you.
Yeah, I think it probably starts with each enterprise making a very strong self-evaluation. You know, looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, you know, where do I want to invest? Do I want to build these capabilities within the organization and permanently have them on as a skill set? Or is this something that I only need one time? And if it's a one-time conversion, you know, over to a UC platform, does it make sense for me? What skills should I build and what skills should I outsource? And based on that, make a decision about, do I outsource the whole thing? Do I outsource maybe an initial implementation or network infrastructure? And then I can handle, you know, some, you know, maybe smaller site rollouts or some maintenance work. But that internal reflection, I think, is the first thing that really needs to be done. And I think a lot of times IT directors think that they have greater skills sometimes than they actually have. And so they need to arrange a safety net for themselves. And I think that that's where the SI can play an important role. So that first evaluation and then secondly building themselves a safety net, I think, is probably the first real important step for them before they get started. I guess your point that Link, because of its complexity, is very difficult to just pick up. Absolutely. And I think there's a tremendous training investment And I watched, you know, some of the folks who've become very proficient at Link, and you look at the amount of time it's taken for them to be prepared for that and think, that's a huge hurdle for most businesses to take on internally. Now, some do. You know, we have run across some enterprises who've said, we want to make this be a skill set that's part of our infrastructure, and we're going to make the investment, the people, and the time. Now, admittedly, the people sometimes don't stick around either once they figure out what they're worth. Yeah.
And I think there's a false sense of ease and support. So when the IAM and Presence deployments went out, they went out gracefully, beautiful, and then respectfully, you know, Microsoft was saying VoIP as you are. So, oh, it's going to be easy. And to Jordan's point, when you get to the conferencing pieces and the enterprise voice, and then you're potentially looking at integration and integration with Contact Center, that's really where you start to realize it's a lot of complexity. Link touches all aspects of your infrastructure, QoS architecture, LAN, WAN, wireless infrastructure, wireless density studies. It's endless on all the stuff that you have to make sure that's addressed in a voice transformation project.
You've got an IMP internal platform. That's easy to deploy. That's easy.
Yeah. It's a false sense of security.
And off you go.
Absolutely.
It's the other two main areas, the edge functionality, PSTN functionality. That's where we need to have help, really.
Agree.
Yeah.
Few strategic suppliers. There's never one throat to choke. I agree with the panel.
So, but the last 10 or 15 minutes of the discussion, it sounds to me like we love the complexity also somehow. So from a user's perspective again, the most important learning I had, and I have seen bigger deployments since 2009, this is where we saw really bigger rollouts of a couple of thousand users. The ones that have been really successful have been those where you have involved HR and people who are responsible for organizational development and guys who manage the facilities, and not just make it another IT project in your organization. So getting the users very early in and asking, what is it from a business perspective? What's our objective? What do we want to achieve? We want to increase productivity. We want to really leverage all our investments we have made in the infrastructure. If you take that angle, if you start planning from that perspective, definitely you have a good chance. Still, you will end up with a lot of technology challenges, but you have a good chance to meet the requirements of your users. So that's the biggest learning we have. To give them a voice and include them very early in the planning process and give them also choice in the very early planning process and listen to them and then build on that feedback, build your infrastructure.
Yeah, so learning is not just technical learning, it's about the softer approach as well of deploying and onboarding businesses.
A good example of that is, you know, as much as we'd love to have all cell phone onlys and save cost of cell phone, the reality is once you get out into the business, you find that there may be a labor contract that requires a certain phone, a hard phone, or a phone feature set, you know, for that labor contract. So even soft phone, it would be great to do, but once you get out into the field and engage those other team members, you find requirements like that that may drive a hard phone.
Well, I just have one more question before turning it over to all of you for the last several minutes. And that is, you know, yesterday we heard Gurdeep in his keynote talk about this notion of universal communications as the new UC. Now, I know it's only been, you know, 24 or 30 hours, something like that. But how do you, what extent have you internalized that at this point? Where do you see the partner-led innovation coming in, as we kind of expand this notion of UC?
So. I must really admit, when I heard universal communication for the first time, it was like a contradiction, because I thought we were all trying to unify everything. So my read of that is actually more down to the individual. So the choice discussion we had is more how I want to use things. So besides bring my own device, bring my own applications, and hopefully being able to collaborate and connect easily with people and make it very intuitive to me. My key takeaway is that I would like to integrate all these means of communication as deep as possible into application I'm using every day and have a conversation or collaborate with people as natural as possible. And so being really open, having open architecture, supporting all the different choice of endpoints, operating systems, type of software people are bringing, ideally being fully browser integrated and supported, because that's apparently what people like to do. They buy devices where they can browse internet content, and if communication is an element of that, that's definitely something people embrace and appreciate. So that's how I look at it. So universal in terms of having a common denominator, devices people love to have in their pockets, and then applications they primarily use, and hopefully then the communication collaboration piece is a layer that is just underneath it, supporting me. It's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was very torn. On one hand, the optimist in me said, that's the way it should be done. You know, it should be done consistent user experience. And it really, universal communications is more about a consistent user experience, I think, than it is, you know, moving to a consistent user experience. The skeptic in me said, you know what, there still needs to be an analog phone hanging on a pole in the middle of the grocery store so they can, you know, they can ask for help. You know, a $500 phone in a store clerk's hand does not make sense, right? We would love to sell the store clerk a $500 handheld wireless deck device, but the reality is that a $99 or $9 phone, you know, zip tied to the pole is a lot more cost effective. So there's a little bit of a reality sort of skeptic dose that came in as part of that. So the user experience, I think, the vision of the user experience is a beautiful dream. The reality is that the actual use case sometimes is much more simplistic, much more concrete. So I think that maybe stretching what the definition of universal communications include, universal meaning very simplistic sometimes communication, is something we just need a dose of reality as we move to this. But I applaud the vision, but there's a lot of steps until we get to the end of the Yellow Brick Road.
So let me give a couple examples of how partners can innovate. And let me give one that's internal, and then I'll talk about one external. So in the area of innovation, AT&T product is very good at what I call taking notes from the field. So they take back the consultant SI work that we're doing with our large customers, and they look to add either new products or capabilities in the feature set. So a lot of the feedback that we gave back to internal AT&T was this complex scenario of integration of video conferencing solutions. So what AT&T product did is develop the virtual meeting room for Link. That way, a external user can come into your Link infrastructure and integrate via the virtual meeting room. So I encourage you to go look at that product on our AT&T booth. And then with a vendor, working with Audio Codes, doing customers the size of Royal Dutch Shell, the professional services audit company is 200,000, mixed bag of PBXs. We found that there were certain needs for voice transformation. So we actually worked with Audio Codes on a specific timer to implement that timer on a gateway to allow a short duration of legacy voicemail integration so we can transform over time. And then we're working with Audio Codes on a pretty significant gap. I'm not going to talk about the link gap here today. It's not talk about gaps in the product, but there's a pretty good gap in the industry for this feature capability, and we're talking to Audio Codes product about bringing this to market because we see it across market segments. So healthcare needs this scenario, manufacturing needs this scenario, and we're looking to innovate with our partners as well.
I was thrilled to hear Gurdeep talk about universal communications. It's very much aligned with our Unify Square vision when we founded Unify Square, of helping enterprises transform how they do business through transforming how they communicate. So it's very expansive. It's a lot of opportunity here, and I think we're less than one-third done with that mission. I see unified communications and business process transformation as at least a 20-year innovation cycle, much like the internet itself is at least a 20-year, pushing 30 innovation cycle. So the best is ahead of us, especially when enterprises are in a solid enough, a stable enough position with Link to then communicate with their consumers. That enterprise to consumer communication space, I think, is ripe with opportunity. All of the vendors of every stripe, innovators of every stripe, just out here at the panel, devices, for instance, that can help patients get some self-service healthcare sitting at their homes, or big systems integrators that can can help a big global investment bank roll out video kiosks for self-service, and so on and so forth. There's this immense possibility ahead, and I'm very excited about the vision.
I think I would share that enthusiasm. Interesting, though, I think human nature will be the one thing that slows that down. Because no matter what you do, you're always going to have somebody who doesn't want to play or wants to do something differently and has a good reason for doing so. Like, we still have multiple platforms. We still have mainframes that are out there, and people are still using them for very good reasons. So you're still going to always have disagreements over standards. You're going to have innovation that maybe far outside of what everyone else is doing. So I think you're always going to have this struggle. So I'm not sure you're ever going to get to universal communication, unless you just get rid of humans. But I don't think we're planning to do that anytime soon. But certainly, over time, you're going to see more standardization. You're going to see multiple platforms being able to communicate. We're already seeing that. They're able to communicate. And especially with mobility now, it's all about one person, any device, multiple platforms being able to get access. That's great. So we're definitely heading there. Universal, you know, I think there's always going to be impediments to that. And also security, and who do you want to be able to communicate with you, who has access to you, who shouldn't have access to you. There's all those aren't going to go away either. Again, unless we can get rid of the human nature, there's always going to be reasons to put up walls in some cases for various reasons. But yeah, I think it's an interesting concept, and I think we're going to be getting closer to it. I'm not sure we'll ever get to total universal, but we'll, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, but Watson cannot enjoy a meal.
No. The winnings of the game. That's the other thing.
All right, now I'll open up to you. Now it's your turn. And it's my turn to fulfill my dream of being Phil Donahue for an afternoon.
Actually, I want to just follow up on the last conversation for a second. And a new sort of connection I just made about universal. Think about universal service. You know, dial tone was universal service. And if we extend that to say universal communications is taking that to another level and making it as ubiquitous, it's a nice connection to make with universal.
Anybody else?
This is sort of going back to the earlier ecosystem question, which is, you know, sometimes it's useful to have a second source for a vendor because it gives you a little more leverage. And it gives you also an alternative if there's a problem. And in some cases, you balance the two. In which case, it's actually an ecosystem where you have actually direct competitors. But in some cases, they're direct competitors that, you know, as they know, they're going to succeed better if the market is only a few. And so they would like to be one of the few. And so in some cases, they work well in a complementary fashion, even with a competitor, so that you can put in you can have two routers so that if there's a specific failure, your whole network won't go down with that one virus, say. I'm just giving you an example. So I guess it's a question really for each of you really is you know, how important is a second source for your product in the enterprise? And then, you know, who would you suggest as that second source if, and I think most of you actually would fall in that category of being useful to have a second source, but I'd love to hear the answers to that. I mean, I know it's asking you to name who would be an honorable competitor, but at the same time, I think it's part of building that understanding of how an ecosystem works.
Thank you.
So let me try to answer it.
Okay. So let me try to answer it this way. I think one of the trends that we're seeing with UC, especially when we host a platform, Link specifically, is diversity and carrier diversity. So one of the options that we offer with the Link Managed Service is and this is coming a very common trend, is a co-location cage in our data center. And that way they can have carrier diversity, they can bring other products and solutions, and then the security teams can have additional layers of security layered in there. So we recognize that we may have competitors, you know, from a carrier perspective, you know, in that. And we align to what, you know, the customers are looking for and want to accomplish.
There's really two ways to look at the competitive environment. You can look at it at the element level, which you can say, you know, who makes an alternative gateway, or who makes an alternative headset, or who makes an alternative. But the reality is, the competitive environment is all the way up at the application layer. It really, as we've all realized, that there's going to end up being three large communication solution implementations in the marketplace. Probably in the next 5 years, it's going to fall out to be about three. And then it's going to be the choices: is it A, B, or C? Right, as to which one you go with. And then there can be alliances underneath. If they're open, there'll be alliances underneath it. Otherwise, it'll be a closed system.
So say Microsoft, say Cisco, and say Avaya. Just to be clear, that's sort of the ABC, the idea of when the UC broader market consolidates, assuming it does consolidate, yeah. the likely big ones would be them.
Right, and I suspect in the end, that's where
and Google.
Up.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
I'm not sure Avaya was the third.
Yeah, okay.
So the side effect is, not to get myopic and start to look in terms of, who's an alternative for this, headset or handset or whatever that, but instead look at the big picture and say, all right, which of these three big platforms am I going to focus on, and then choose the best of breed in those platforms and depend on the SIs and their experience.
I understand what you're saying, but actually, unfortunately, it's due to competitive forces. We're seeing very little co-opetition at that top level. Okay, so companies do generally feel obliged to sort of pick one of the horses and sort of line up, and then they line up their architecture around it, like that. Yes, and so if you are lining up Link, and this is sort of the audience for that choice, and they're deciding on their gateways, and they decide audio codes is a good one. What would be your recommendation about having a second gateway SBC source, and who would be a complementary one that you think would work with your environment as a second source would they need it? That's really the focus of the question.
You're like the guy at Starbucks. You're like the guy at Starbucks who closes the cream, aren't you? I knew it. You were the guy at Starbucks.
I blame Jabra and I blame Link because now I mute because of the increased.
You're muted.
Yeah. All right. Wait, what were we talking about?
Yeah.
No, right. So anyway, obviously our competitors. There are clearly some competitive gateway platforms that are out there, and they keep us nimble and they keep us on our toes, and they help us innovate because they come up.
Well,
all right, I'm not going to name them.
It may be that your position is that in the gateway arena,
right.
You have a stronger solution if you have a single gateway provider. I don't know. Maybe that's your position.
No, I don't think it is. I think, like with all businesses, you need to have a good, strong competitor to keep you on your toes, right? So I do applaud having good, solid competition. And this is true of any element within the network. The key is when somebody starts to make choices is if they decide to have a mixed environment, they're making a cost choice that sometimes is more complex than just the cost of the elements, because it's the duplicate training, the duplicate certification, the duplicate... They don't have the buying power because they don't have, they have not consolidated the purchasing. So there is a cost sometimes that they don't realize that they're sacrificing when they choose a multi-vendor environment. So honestly, I think it's wise if someone wants to pick a horse to stick with that horse. Now, we prefer it to be our horse, but I understand people choosing the other horse. And that's fine, and the competition is good. And having two good, healthy gateway vendors in the marketplace is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. So that's my expectation. And you'll notice I colored it.
I can see that work in the SBC scenario and then the SBAs out in the field. But mixing
SBAs is probably not a good idea from the management structure. But we do have customers. I'm not going to name the other vendor.
We do have customers where we deployed a different SBC and then used a different SBA. But I don't think I can name a customer where we had a mix and match of SBAs in the field.
Just want to say thanks for your questions. You're the proud owner.
I was going to say, give them to
Bill. You get one as well?
Yeah. You know what? No,
you don't want one? All right. Yeah. Hey, we have a question. Yeah, I'm back there.
He was talking about vendors, so don't pick vendors. And Sonu, you're a captive Microsoft, so more of the other folks, especially the consulting. It's not so much vendors, but there's a difference in generation. I like what Sheila said about universal service. That was dial tone, but universal communications could be a much richer media thing. So you're making a business model or a technology bet, and arguably Microsoft or Google are further ahead than, say, Cisco or Avaya. So could you just comment on that kind of bet as opposed to you multi-vendor? That's a safe thing to say, but what kind of, how is this stuff going to evolve, and what bets are you going to make in terms of your investments?
Oh, like big bets for AT&T or big bets from the panel. So I think I talked a little bit earlier about AT&T or carriers in general. You know, we have to innovate and create new capabilities because the wireline business is declining. So we have to have new capabilities to replace lost areas of revenue. So we're certainly going to innovate in that space. From a voice perspective, certainly Microsoft is giving us new channels. We have decades and decades of voice transformation experience with other vendor platforms. So this is really a new opportunity for us to continue our good work and our good business to help customers with those voice transformation on a new platform. So where you may be even going back to the large, like an automobile company, where originally it was one vendor platform, and now we're going back for a link infrastructure for voice transformation. So it's kind of full circle for some of the stuff that we do, and then it's new and innovation for some of the new stuff that we do, and it's all about creating that or revenue generating, focus in front of us.
And the talk about the big bets for HP, we actually have defined four big bets, which are really what we're seeing for the future. One of those is mobility, and that's where I focus. The other one is cloud. The other one is big data. And the other one is data center transformation. So if you think about those four big bets for HP, there's an underlying kind of theme there, and the theme is that the entire infrastructure for IT is changing. Big data implies that more and more data is coming in from many, many more sources, most of those mobile sources. So that's big data. Mobility obviously implies that you're enabling and you're dealing with mobile devices and people whose work and their data collection is becoming much more diverse across multiple platforms. Data center consolidation is talking about the same thing. How is the data center supporting that movement? How's that happening? So our big bets as a corporation are really implying a total change over time in the entire infrastructure and how it works.
And we see Link doing for communications what PCs did for computing 30 years ago. It's a pretty fundamental transformation. In terms of big bets, one big bet we're placing is the way enterprises and consumers are going to communicate 15 years from now is going to be fundamentally different, fundamentally transformational. Today, that communication is too transactional. It's too expensive, and it's painful. When's the last time any of us loved calling our airline about our reservation coming up tomorrow? All of that's going to radically change the end-user experience, the relationship, the longevity of the relationship, the productivity of the relationship, the innovation that spurs. And I think underlying that fundamental shift is going to be a lot of things that Jordan just talked about, innovations in the cloud, the data center, and how all of the information flow is managed to make that transformation happen.
Changing tack slightly, we've spoken about a lot of the core things around Link as a product. what are the new, what traditional type of voice and PBX technologies that you think are going to be adopted by Link, like contact center and those sort of things? But then also, what do you see as a big potential for generating new parts of the ecosystem that maybe traditional telephone systems wouldn't easily adopt, whereas Link can?
Make sure it's turned on. I was going to reach over and shut it off on him in his lap. No, just kidding. So a couple of areas, I think, first of all, any of the business process application enhancements, I think that's an area that's just ripe for development by a lot of the SIs and some of the development partners. And I think the API access is really going to open that up, especially some of the Java stuff that we saw in the keynote yesterday. Things popped to mind, like, how cool would it be if I set up a conference call with somebody, and when they join, their LinkedIn profile pops up in a little window. Just cool things like that to just, fly through my head. CRM integration, absolutely. Contact center is an obvious one. Integration between Link and Dynamics. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think there's a whole ecosystem that will evolve of software application developers who will write applications on top of Link. The contact center guys are just getting started, but IVR, alternative messaging platforms, beyond Exchange, all kinds of, business productivity, web app applications, all kinds of really, and so there's a whole ecosystem, I think, is yet to sort of evolve that will grow out of that space. And it's going to be pretty interesting. And they're going to come up with things that you never could have dreamed of and enhance businesses in ways.
So Sabina Peterselves from BNSF, actually, they have a talented team of professionals, like I mentioned earlier, on Link. They didn't need to relinquish that infrastructure. They're relinquishing that infrastructure to focus more on what you guys are talking about, focusing on end-user training, focusing on business-enabled communication business process. And then on the slide earlier, down at the bottom, we didn't really talk about it, but the CRM was a component of hers to reach out to the business. So it's down there in Cloud CRM. Now they're able to focus less on PBXs, servers and data centers and Link, and they're focused on that type of activity, which is the business value proposition to their customers.
She doesn't even want to have Genesis and Cloud CRM. She wants one. She wants that to be one thing.
Right.
She's like, why do I have two things here?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And then they'll say they want Link to be the contact center. Why do we have to have those?
Just a couple more ideas. I mean, I mentioned big data before as one of our big bets at HP. Kind of building on the idea, I have a number of financial services clients, and they have contact centers, call centers, whatever you want to call them. And they have, this is all kinds of names for them. But at the end of the day, you have someone with a headset, they're answering the phone, and they're trying to bring up as much information on the caller as possible and as quickly as possible. And most companies have written a number of custom apps to do that. And they have huge screens, and all these things are popping up. So going forward, I think you mentioned having LinkedIn come up would be really neat. It's really about how much data can be brought up on a person or a company or something that you're dealing with quickly. It's usable data. Could be contact specific. But usable data that could come up as you're processing or communicating with somebody for some purpose, that's something that's probably going to be very value added. And we're not there yet. But over time, we'll get to the point where that data will be able to be processed quickly, accessed quickly, and be relevant. Relevancy is very important because there's a lot of data out there now. It's just completely irrelevant. The big data story as well. There's lots of data being collected. How do you actually, and we have products that do this, and they're not perfect, not even close to being perfect, but there will come a time where the relevancy of the data, the big data, is a lot closer to what you want it to be, and it starts becoming useful.
This opens up another whole door conversation, which is with Link Online and Office 365, basically there's going to be delivery of vanilla services. But to open up this door to all these enhanced services, you need to get at these APIs. And they're not, honestly, they're not going to be available from that hosted vanilla platform. You're going to have to do either dedicated hosted or on-prem implementations of Link. And businesses, I think, now need a much clearer vision of what are they sacrificing when they let go. And I don't think sometimes they're using, they don't envision these other applications coming along. And therefore, they're letting go, and I think they're making a mistake when they let go. And in some cases, they're going to have to, the cost of creating the application is that they're going to have to pull the application back inside. And that's, I think, unfortunately, going to be a tough decision for them.
But it might be an enabler.
Hey, we've got this link online that's cheap. Let's go for it. Oh, we can all do all these other things. Hey, let's bring it to a dedicated solution. Good. Yeah. And I think your question is also about the near and midterm. What's up the next 2-3 years? What's hot? What's likely to take off? Two areas in particular, I think, are likely to take off are federation and video. With federation, I think it's sort of an underappreciated key business driver. But enterprises, as they start to deploy it, now big banks and so on getting into the game, and with federation clouds like Market, we'll start to see some pretty serious transactional B2B business happen over Link Federation. The other area is video, where with Link Room System, I think we have a huge game changer in how enterprises can access video and the ease of accessing video and relative value to relative effort. So I think I see that as poised for liftoff the next 2 years.
Well, B2C, Skype, looking ahead, that seems like a good way to wrap things up. I think we're officially out of time, but thanks to all of you for being here. I really appreciate that. I'm going to give you a quick round of applause. And thanks for all of your questions. I'll stick around for a few minutes. I don't know if these guys have extra time, but we do need to wrap up here. So thanks.